Hello, yellow everyone. This is Eddie Fettig, aka Destiny Smasher. Welcome to the Same Sky Cast, where we bring all worlds under the same sky. This episode, I have a nice discussion with Stuttering Craig over at ScrewAttack.com.
Welcome out to Same Sky Cast on ScrewAttack.com. What is going on? Hey!
Hey! You are Stuttering Craig.
Yeah.
I am Eddie Fettig, also known as Destiny Smasher in various places. I'm the reviews editor of GoNintendo.com. Welcome to the Same Sky Cast, people. As you can tell, today I have Stuttering Craig. He is the head honcho over at ScrewAttack.com, which is probably where you're listening to this too. Yeah, how are you doing today, Craig?
Pretty awesome, man. It's been a busy couple days. We've been really gearing up. We got so much stuff going on the site and so many new ideas floating around that it's really, really fun right now. So
cool. How's stuff for SGC coming? I know it's coming up pretty soon, right?
Yeah. July 4th weekend, July 2nd through 4th. It's actually going phenomenal. We're expecting a ton of people this year. Literally like a ton. When I say like 2,000, we've got like 2,000 people out there, which is gonna be really, really neat. So we're growing fast. We got a lot of stuff going on. The reputation of it just being a badass weekend party is what it's all about, and that's kind of where we're going. So we're gonna be making some announcements about what we have coming up, but for the most part, things are going great. So
cool. That's actually a good sort of segue. Let's talk more about SGC. How old is SGC?
Well, we're going into we've been doing events pretty much since our start, but SGC is in its second year. We did the Iron Man of Gaming. We're going into the fourth annual Iron Man of Gaming, and at SGC, which is the second SGC. So the big event is SGC, and at SGC we have the Iron Man of Gaming, which is our big tournaments we do. So second year with SGC. Last year was the debut event, had over 1,000 people there from all around the world, which was phenomenal. It was really, really cool to meet people from Japan and and down south in South America and Europe, and everyone coming together because they either knew about it on the website or just, it's really cool just to see everybody come together with one common bond, that being video games and fun. And man, we definitely have a good weekend. So,
cool. That's pretty awesome. I'm sure you guys have some cool stuff lined up for this year as well.
Yeah.
Now, where exactly does SGC take place?
SGC takes place it's called the DFW Westin. It's in Dallas, Texas. It's about 3 minutes away from DFW Airport. If anyone wants to get any information, they can do so at sgconvention.com. We are, almost, 9-10 weeks away from SGC 2010. Once again, it's July 2nd through 4th. If you are flying into the area, it's, the trams to the West End are absolutely free. The transportation to and from is free, and it's crazy easy to get to if you're coming in from out of town. So cool. It's great.
Awesome. So I guess let's sort of go back to basics here. When did ScrewAttack start, and what all had to come together to get ScrewAttack up and running?
Well, ScrewAttack, there's always things there's always things going on to keep ScrewAttack up and going. But ScrewAttack started, we officially launched in February of 2006 with this rinky-dink, crappity little black HTML site that my brother put together for us. That was just like, he put together in like 10 minutes, and he was like, yeah, I'll put it together real quick. And I did that real fast, and sorry, that's my alarm. guess the game. Any ideas?
Sounds like Mega Man.
Yes, that's right. Mega Man 1, that's right.
Nice.
We started in February 2006. We, after a few months of conceptualizing and rehearsing, and pretty much as soon as we launched, we realized that what we were doing, the whole idea of the website was to gear everything around our podcast, Side Scrollers, and because I was like, man, there's never been a video game talk show. Who does video game talk shows? And I did all this research, and we very quickly found out after we launched, because we didn't know anything about the internet at the time, that there were these crazy things called podcasts that everybody and their mother was doing. So we started off doing SideScroll, which is our focal point, and about 3 or 4 months into it, we really made the jump to doing videos, and we started producing video game vaults and just random fun videos. A little bit later on, we said, okay, well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to do a video every day. And that's where the idea of the really kind of what you see on Screw Attack on a day-to-day basis now, something original every day, came about. So
yeah, that's awesome. So, I mean, Screw Attack just started off as, like, how many people did it start off with, really?
Well, it started off initially with two. It was myself and Tom. And we started off together and went like that for probably about a year. And then I realized that we were kind of taking on a workload that we couldn't handle all by ourselves. So we needed to bring in some new folks to kind of help us out. So I went actually down to my old high school, and they had like an AV club and or an AV class or something, audio video type tech class. And I went in there looking for one kid who would come and help us out and just kind of do a little bit of grunt work, maybe a little bit of editing along the way, and came out of going in there with three folks who were willing to help us out. Actually, four initially, and then one dropped off like really quick, and so we really quickly expanded out to five, and it's kind of grown since.
Nice, cool. How many people currently do stuff over at Screw Attack?
Well, in the HQ on a day-to-day basis, let's see, we have myself, we have Destin, we have, Corey is in on Wednesdays now, we have Jose, we have Brian, we have Nick, we have Ben, we have Chad, we have, we got a lot of people here now. It's a lot more, so, you know, and then you throw in like you throw in Game Attack, you know, which is our video game store we have here in Dallas. We got a lot of people working for Screw Attack now, which is really, really pretty cool, so, it's definitely been an interesting period, specifically over the last couple of years, where we've been able to grow. So
yeah, definitely. And then of course you've got other people who kind of don't work at the HQ, but like make their stuff that gets put up on the site, like the Angry Video Game Nerd, like Keith Apicary, like the Game Overthinker, people like that.
Oh yeah, yeah. All our partners are phenomenal. They do such a great job. And you know, while they may not be at the office on a day-to-day basis, at the HQ, they definitely are part of the family, you know, on a day-to-day basis. So,
cool. So, when people found out that I was going to be having a sit down to talk with you for a while, I had a number of people tell me that I had to ask you this, because I'm sure you get asked this, but whatever happened to Handsome Tom?
I get this. It's amazing how often I hear this. I hear this every day.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. And I don't mind talking about it. I've never dodged the question at all. And I've always said if anybody wants to talk about it, they're more than welcome to talk about it. And all they got to do is email me. So I'm glad you asked. Long story short is, you know, we were working together, and there were some differences in kind of what was expected and kind of where we wanted to go. And, you know, from there, it was kind of core differences. Some things happened, that happened, I guess, after we kind of made the split, that kind of made things a little bit harder to, if we ever did want to work together again, it make it a little bit harder to do so.
Right.
You know, but, you know, just the long story short is, you know, we just grew apart as people. We grew apart as business folks. And, you know, he's doing something different now. I think he's, doing pizzas. I think he has a pizza shop now, here in Dallas. And, you know, so, you know, it's good luck to him. You know, I've it's just kind of one of those things where things happen, and it was a little more public, you know, than people, you know, the type of thing happens every day in real life, you know, but it doesn't happen every day where people, you know, it happens in a public forum where people, you know, have to choose sides or whatever, which, it's something that I never really understood, was the whole choosing sides type of things. You know, it's just something that happens. And, you know, if people are choosing sides over, you know, oh, Handsome Tom sucks, oh, Stuttering Craig sucks, that's so, for lack of better words, retarded. You don't need to be like that. There's nothing There's nothing about that, you know. It's stupid. Just things happen. People grew apart. You know, I think we've always taken the high road in how we've handled that situation. You know, and I mean there have been plenty of times where I've wanted to, you know, go off on rants and just say, you know, tell people how fucking retarded they are. But because they don't know. There's only two people who really absolutely 100% know everything that's happened, and that's me and Tom. Yeah. And everything that I remember the podcast that I, you know, went out and kind of filled everybody in about, you know, Tom leaving and such. And some people were like I will honestly say that everything I said in that podcast was 100% honest and genuine. And, you know, some people think I'm a total dick for the decisions that were made. And some people like, you know, respect the decisions I made because the business needed to change or whatever. Mm. But I'd like to think that over the last couple of years that, you know, we've kind of managed to reinvent ourselves as well as kind of grow and do kind of what we wanted to do all along. So,
well, good. I'm definitely sorry to hear about that. I've had my own fair share of that sort of thing over the past couple of years. So,
yeah, you know, like I said, it happens every day. It just doesn't happen online for thousands of people to see, you know, and unfortunately some people can't see, look past it. And, you know, if they can't, then, you know, sorry, you know, we're doing some great things here that if they just can't, you know, open their eyes and open their mind a little bit, then, you know, that's their loss.
Yeah. Well, we're not here to talk too much about Tom. We're here to talk more about you. So, I just have a few, you know, just basic questions for a lot of the, G1s, just to get to know you maybe more on a more personal level, like your taste and stuff. So like,
sure.
I don't know, like what TV shows do you follow?
Ah, that's cool. You know, right now on my TiVo, I got several shows. My favorite show right now is probably, it hasn't been on in a long time. It's Man vs. Food. I love that show on the Food Network. Or no, it's on the Travel Channel, I think.
Okay.
It's this show where this dude just goes around and eats all his food and he tells you how good it is. Then he does a eating challenge. You know, like we've done eating challenges on Screw Attack for a long time. And so now they've actually made a show out of eating challenges, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
You know, I watch, unlike a lot of gamers, I watch a lot of sports. I'm a sports fan. I love sports. You know, sports and video games are both like equal passions to me. And I love watching basketball. I love watching football and such like that. I watch SportsCenter every night, you know, and you know, it's just something I've grown up doing. And I, you know, people are like, you're a gamer, you can't do that. Well, yeah, I can do whatever the hell I want. You know, I play games, I watch it. Let's see. Amber's Food. Let's see, what else is on my TiVo right now? Gosh, you know, I'm a closet wrestling fan. Okay. I don't like talk about it a lot, but I love to watch wrestling on TiVo. Whether that's WWE or TNA, I'll just kind of fast forward and listen to the, you know, it's just like this ultimate male soap opera, and I've been into that since I got into that late in high school, and I've been kind of watching it ever since. And the guys I started watching it with don't watch it anymore, and I'm the guy who's kind of still hanging on, you know, just kind of watching it. So, you know, I like to think I watch a pretty good variety of stuff. And it's really sad to say that I don't watch a single second of G4. Well, I guess it's not really sad to say. I mean,
I don't have anything specifically against G4, like, not specifically. I actually, some of the people that work there, I actually do really like them, like some of the specific people. Like, I like Adam Sessler, I like Kevin Pereira, and Olivia Munn. I like those guys a lot, so, like, when I do watch G4, it's usually either Attack of the Show or X-Play.
Sure.
But I definitely can understand why a lot of people in the gaming community aren't so hot on that channel in general. So
I think it's amazing that a gaming channel, it's designed to broadcast to gamers, that the gamers who are supposed to be watching it, they can't stand it.
Yeah.
You know, they're not warm to it. You know, gamers are a very cynical group.
They are.
You know, I mean, speaking from experience. You know,
amen.
We're very cynical, you know. So when something, you know, it's almost like it's overproduced, I guess. And when you see somebody who you know is not a gamer, that they're just reading lines, you know, that necessarily doesn't really rub me the right way, but.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I think it's one of the reasons why I like Adam Sessler a lot is because you can tell when you watch him talk about games that Adam Sessler cares about what he's talking about. Like, he's into games. He cares about games. And when he does like his soapbox segments, have you ever seen those?
Yeah, Sessler knows his stuff, man.
Yeah, he does.
Having spoken to that guy, I like very much. I very much respect that guy, and I think that out of anybody, he's the one who needs to have a platform on a daily basis. It's that guy over there, because you know he is I don't know if you know his origins, because he started he did like a cable access show about gaming or something, and
oh, really?
And they found him through that, you know, which is like awesome.
Yeah.
I think it's really, really cool. So you know, much respect for that guy, but not so much respect for the other female host on there, because they're just faces. Let's be honest. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I honestly kind of feel that way too. I don't actually know who the current host is of that show, because I haven't watched X-Play in a while, and it seemed like it would kind of switch periodically. But in either case,
sure.
What kind of music are you into?
You know, I spend a lot of time. I like, this is going to sound really gay, but I like happy music. I like happy music, except for when I'm like ready just to punch something. And let me explain my answer there. I like music that has like a positive vibe. I'm not like super hippie guy, but I like music. I don't like music that is all about, you know, slapping a bitch and doing drugs and going to the club and stuff. I like, you know, people's natural first instinct is to, you know, listen to beats in songs. And, you know, I do that a lot too. And I'm not going to say I haven't listened to 50 Cent and such, but, you know, and I'm not going to say I don't like 50 Cent music. I do, but at the same time, I do think there's better resources, or better songs out there, better music out there that sends better messages, you know, than about being a slut and dancing on poles and kissing other chicks and such. Not that there's anything wrong with kissing other chicks. I'm just saying, you know, there are other things. So, but, you know, I also will, this is totally contradicting. This is like calling the kettle black, but I love Prodigy, which is, this phenomenal band, and I do like Linkin Park. I know people are like,
I have some love for them too now and again. I think that they get a lot of backlash, because a lot of their songs do tend to have this like certain type of vibe about them, but if you actually like listen to their songs, like they actually do have like pretty strong like melodies and harmonies and stuff, and I'm all about that. Like, so
the thing is, I don't know the first thing about melodies and harmonies, but I do know that sometimes you just need a song where a guy is just screaming, you know.
Yeah. Sometimes.
And you know, sometimes you just need that. Sometimes you need a little boost, and sometimes a dude screaming into a microphone with a cool little beat and the DJ scratching in the background is exactly what you need. So
yeah, no, definitely. So I probably wouldn't feel too bad about that. I see. What I feel bad about is the fact that my wife is into a lot of whatever tends to be popular on the radio. She tends to find certain songs from that group that she attaches to, and then she gets me interested in them. So like now I'm a Taylor Swift fan just because I like, yeah, maybe that makes me gay. I don't know, but I like most of Taylor Swift's songs that I've listened to. So there you go.
Well, here's the thing. First, you are gay. Actually, Taylor Swift is pretty funny, because, you know, the fact that she writes all her own music and then performs her own music, I respect that very much. And having a brother who is a musician, you know, that's very hard to do. And obviously she's gotten a few breaks, and being as young as she is and being as talented as she is, you know, you need those breaks to be seen. And she's definitely taken advantage of them, and she's captured the hearts of America with her music.
Yeah. I think that what I also like about her is that when I listen to her music and when I see like her music videos and stuff, I get this impression that she's more about being herself. Like a lot of her songs, even like some of her songs actually seem to directly like encourage, like, you know, most likely like the young female early teen listeners that she has to like not be concerned about doing like whatever other people will think is cool, but just like being themselves and whatever. And I respect that. I wish there was more artists that, you know, the young people of America are listening to that promoted like these more, you know, just wholesome themes of just be yourself and don't make stupid decisions and don't go banging hoes and whatever. You know what I mean?
Well, it's one of those things where it's like, that's really cool, but she's like super hot. So, you know, it's like, don't go do all this stuff. Don't do this. Don't do this. You know, it's okay to be secure with yourself. But I'm really hot, by the way. You know, it's just one of those things. You know, but I do agree with some of her messages, and her songs are fairly cutie and poppy and such.
Yeah.
And I don't mind them. I don't mind them at all. I think they're, you know, I'm not gonna say I like will stop down and listen to them when I hear them on the radio. But
you don't mind them. Yeah,
it's not like an absolute change the channel when I hear them. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, now that we've gone all the way out there, we should probably get back to some gaming topics here, since that's probably what people are coming to listen
Serious
for.
Serious business. Let's do it.
Indeed. What are some of your most favorite retro games? And when I say retro, I guess I mean anything, you know, more than like 5 to 10 years old, I guess.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing that like the Dreamcast and N64, well, I guess, and like even the GameCube now is starting to be considered retro, and that's amazing to me. But you know, for me, retro will always be like everything from right before the N64 and back.
Yeah.
I would say that you know, obviously Street Fighter is played a huge role in kind of who I am. If you pretty much watch our top 20 Super Nintendo games, you're gonna see the games that like shaped me and kind of are my favorite games. Games like UN Squadron for the Super Nintendo, which was called Area 88 in the arcades and in Japan. You know, like games like Dale and Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers on the NES. Even the original Tetris on the original NES. Games like games that I never really had a chance to play, but I always admired from afar, like a Michael Jackson's Moonwalker. you know, like the Genesis was always kind of this like system. I didn't have a Genesis growing up, but I picked one up, you know, like in my teens. So it was always kind of one of those systems that I always wish I had but never did have. So it was always one of those things I kind of admired from afar and said, "Oh man, I wish I could do that. I wish I had that system," type of thing. You know, and if you want to go into, let's see, the Dreamcast, man, there's so many great games on the Dreamcast.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. Pretty much any fighting game on the Dreamcast. I loved NBA Jam, NFL Blitz, NBA Showtime. Those games are some of my favorite games of all time. You don't even have to be a sports fan to like those games.
Yeah. I've even played back during that era, I even played NFL Blitz. I'm not really like, I don't really follow sports, and I rarely play sports games unless they have cartoony mascots in them.
Yeah.
But I got some good mileage out of NFL Blitz back in the day too. So yeah, definitely.
Well, I mean, that's the thing about those games is that they didn't try to trick them up too much. You know, like later versions of the Blitz, they tried to add in different things, and you know, they did some like very basic things of like, you know, when Blitz first came out, it was like, you're a quarterback, you throw the ball, and he catches it, and then he gets creamed. Like, that's all you need to know.
Yep.
You know, and then later on, they started adding, like, audibles and such, and I understand why they added audibles, you know, audibles being that you can switch the play at the line of scrimmage and such. I understand why they added that stuff, but then they, you know, they really kind of tricked it up and went crazy with it as the games started reaching home consoles with like NFL Blitz the League and such. They tried to revive that. They just try, you know, and I think that comes into play with a lot of games nowadays where they try to do way too much with these games and they're too advanced for even the hardcore fans, where it's just like, let's make it simple. Just make them simple, you know.
Yeah, I think that with this new wave of the whole like the DLC front, that a lot of games can have this space now where they can be simple and really fun and just focus on the simple concepts and just run with it and actually succeed, which is something that, you know, like you wouldn't see like Mega Man 9 or 10 in those forms as like a full disc-based release because people would like have a cow, but put them up for like a $10 download, people eat that stuff up.
Absolutely. So, you know, and I think that is the best thing about this, about the gamer space. You know, we actually talked about this on the podcast this week on Side Scrollers, was how, you know, it kind of piggybacking on what you said, if a game like Mega Man 9 or 10 was released, or a game like Bionic Commando Rearmed was released as a box game, you know, people would freak out. But the idea that you can still create old school-ish games and deliver them to an audience, you know, there are still Super Nintendo and N64 games being released, you know, or games that, you know, maybe not proper Super Nintendo games, but games that, you know, could be considered games that, you know, retro, very, very much feeling games that are being released. And that's the coolest thing about this, that, you know, not only do you get an Xbox 360 or a PSN or a Wii, but you have access to all these other games, you know, all the old library of games, all the, you know, all the new games that are coming out with retro feel to it, which is really, really neat.
Yeah, definitely. That's probably my favorite aspect of this generation of gaming as well, both on my Wii and my, I've only had a PS3 ever since January, but I mean, on both platforms, like, I'm all about all the downloadable content, both retro and new. So that's my favorite aspect of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that brings up another question. Are there any, like, at least in recent memory, are there any games that were retro games that you never got to play back when they were new that you did get to play more recently and you fell in love with them and wish that you had, you know, known about them back when you were younger?
Yeah, you know, actually, Mega Man 6. Mega Man 6 was a game that I didn't play a whole lot when it came out. Actually, I didn't play it at all when it came out. And recently I picked it up, within the last 4 years, when ScrewAttack started. I picked it up and realized that the game is actually pretty good. Like, Mega Man 6 is actually, like, a good Mega Man game, and it gets dogged, mostly because it came after 4 and 5, which are still good games, but they're just, like, not Mega Man 1, 2, and 3. But Mega Man 6 is actually really good, and if you haven't played that, I definitely suggest going back and checking it out. It's pretty solid stuff.
I believe you. I got the Mega Man collection back when that was new, and I went through and I played through, like, all 8 of the Mega Mans.
Sure.
And I remember, I don't really remember 4, 5, or 6 very much, mm-hmm. and in many ways I don't really remember much of 8 either. But
you don't need to remember 8.
That's pretty much the opinion I've taken with it. But no, like, from what I remember of them, I think that part of the reason why I don't remember them is because, like, I don't remember them as horrible games. I just don't really remember much about them, and I think that's probably just because they continue to use that solid formula. They just didn't do that much new stuff with it. Now, with Mega Man 6, did that, like, incorporate any kind of new elements, or did it just do, you know, the Mega Man formula really well, and just because it was Mega Man 6 and it was on the NES and Super NES was, like, already out probably by that point or whatever, like, people missed it? Like, what's your take on that?
Well, you know, the thing is, after Mega Man 2, they started implementing new things into the series. Mega Man 1 and 2 were essentially the same game. Mega Man 3 came around, they incorporated the slide. Mega Man 4, you saw the first adaptation of the Mega Buster with the charging of a shot. Mega Man 5, I think they instituted Beat into that one, the bird that flies around.
Okay.
And then Mega Man 6, they actually made Rush into this, he was adaptable to where Mega Man could,
fly. Like, wear him, right? Like,
yeah,
turn him into, like, a more buff robot sort of deal?
Yeah, exactly. He could punch walls and he could fly and such. But probably the coolest thing about that game that doesn't get talked about was there were multiple paths that you could take. About midway through the level, you could either, go to the bottom or go to the top. It was like, you know, left or right type of thing.
Right.
And one way took you, like, an easier way to get to the boss. One way took you to a harder way to get to the boss. But I don't remember the exact consequences of it. But you needed to use Rush to get to those points, to get to a certain way. Like, if you wanted to go to the above route, you needed to use Rush Jet to get up to it. And you needed to unlock Rush before you can get there. So there are it was pretty neat. I really enjoyed it.
Mega Man 10. Have you played Mega Man 10?
I have.
Yeah, Mega Man 10 did that with most, I don't know how many of its levels, but it did that with its levels too, where you'd, like, go off the branching pathways. So they probably kind of took a cue from 6 in doing that, I guess, huh?
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting because Mega Man 10, I thought 9 was better than 10. Not to say 10 is a bad game.
Not at all.
It didn't stick to me as well as 9 did, and
I think me neither.
That may just be because of the retro, you know, just the retro revival of Mega Man 9 and it being 8-bit and such.
Yeah.
And I think that it came out fairly quick. Mega Man 10 came out fairly quick after Mega Man 9,
I
believe, like within a year.
Yeah, within a year. I'm pretty sure within a year, I think.
Yeah,
if not within a year, slightly more than a year, I think, but still.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. I'd like if they waited till, like, this E3 to show off of Mega Man 10, then I'd be cool with that, you know? But one of the things I didn't really like about Mega Man 9 or Mega Man 10 that I harper on about games all the time, I say that I wish games had more color in them. You know, games today are very bland, and the games that have a lot of color, most of them are downloadable games. They're games that
that's true.
But Mega Man 10 kind of went to this, like, Mega Man 5-ish type look to where they used very bland colors in their color.
They kind of did, yeah.
You know, like, when you think of, like, the water level, they use, like, a brown, you know, like a dark blue, you know, it's really bizarre. Something that I wasn't a big fan of, and I just like big, bright, vibrant colors.
Yeah, no, I think that Mega Man, as that 8-bit art design, is more suited to the big, bright colors of, like, Mega Man 2 and 3, and I know 9 has some, you know, has some a pretty bright color palette as well, so.
Oh, absolutely.
No, I'm definitely on that side of the fence too as well. I like Mega Man 9 more than 10. I kind of wish that certain parts of 10 could be like retroactively added to Mega Man 9, like the challenge room, stuff like that.
Sure.
But because I really liked a lot of the powers, and like that was one of my main things with Mega Man 9. Because I reviewed that back when that game came out, and in reviewing it, like the one main thing that sticks out in my head even now is, I used all of the power-ups, like,
yeah,
all of them, in different circumstances. Like, every single power in that game had certain uses at certain points, and then others you could just use, like, you know, whenever you wanted. They were generally useful anyway. Mm-hmm. And I had never played a Mega Man game, which I truly felt that way up until that point. So,
it's a good point.
But anyway, I guess I'm going to try and think of something. Punch-Out. Yeah, that's it, Punch-Out. I never played the original Punch-Out. Until the Virtual Console release. I had an NES back in the day. It's not like I didn't have the means to, but no one I knew played Punch-Out, so I was never introduced to it until the Super NES era, and like I just didn't have the means to play it. But it released on Virtual Console. I downloaded it for, you know, $5, and I probably have spent a total, ever since I bought it, I probably spent a total of like probably 12 to 15 hours playing it, which to me is a lot for, like, just an NES game.
Absolutely.
Like, and I still haven't beaten it, because it's Punch-Out. Like, it's, you have to dedicate yourself to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they released Punch-Out on the Wii, like, I was all over that, because I had played Punch-Out. I had played Super Punch-Out. They did make the Wii version easier in general, I would say, but I still, like, The critic inside me is still trying to figure out if that has to do with the actual game being easier, like the mechanics being easier, or if it's just easier for me to read the tells because everything looks like more animated and stuff. I don't actually know. Like, I should probably go back and like compare, but
I think some of that, I think they definitely, I think part of that has to do with you being able to tell what's happening, but I also think part of that has to do with today's gamer. Today's gamer is not, they don't like hard games. They don't like hard games at all. And today's gamer doesn't like to have to work for things, and it goes back to a discussion that we had a couple weeks, or actually Jared had a couple weeks ago, where he was talking about, you know, he had this Pokemon thing at Game Attack, and all these kids showed up with level 100 guys, and I don't even know what that means, but I guess that means super powered up, because I don't play Pokemon, but you know, like there's a certain level of fulfillment you get when you beat a game that you've been going after and just absolutely just beating on for, and it's been beating on you for weeks, you know, and while the game, we actually have a video game vault coming out very shortly about this, where the game itself may be only an hour long, but it takes you 20 hours to beat it.
Right.
You know,
because
it's so unforgiving, you know, and it's like, it's very unfortunate that nowadays, if you don't have if the game is not, you know, if it's not like, you know, how many hours do you get out of it? Do you get 10 hours, 15 hours? Well, yeah, and then I beat it. You know, it's one of those things where there's almost like a timeline involved.
Yeah.
You know, like if it's not a certain many hours, and then it's just not worth it, then it's not valuable. Well, you know, you can play games
more than once.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, the game, just because there's a save point every 5 minutes doesn't mean that you're good at the game, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. There were no save points. And I know I sound old man-ish, you know, and I don't like to sound old man-ish, but, you know, if you can get that, that's what I love about, like, the Iron Man of gaming, is that you can be good at Halo, but you also need to be good at Super Mario Brothers too, you know?
Yeah.
And that you have to be well-balanced, you know? There's
Yep.
kids who call themselves gamers nowadays, and I was like, no, you're not a gamer. You haven't played the old school stuff. You haven't played, you know, Super Mario World. You haven't played Crazy Taxi, you know?
Yeah.
Everything you know is from Halo 2 on. You don't know anything other than first-person shooters. There's other things out there.
So yeah, definitely.
To make yourself a well-rounded gamer, you know? So.
Yeah, I, like, because I've been, like, over the past year or so, I've gotten pretty into Street Fighter 4 and, of course, now Super Street Fighter 4. That's, like, the first Street Fighter game that I've ever gotten into. I don't even know why I got into it with this one and not any previous one. Just, I don't know, something about the combination of the art design, the characters, the way that it's simplistic to learn, but there's a lot of depth to it, and the way that the online works surprisingly well. Like, all those things just came together into this package that I'm addicted to. Like, I even went out and got an arcade stick for the release of Super Street Fighter 4. I still, like, am not that great with it because transferring skills from a controller to an arcade stick takes time. And so, you know, I just have to keep plugging away at it. But, like, one of the things that I've encountered is that in getting into Street Fighter, I inevitably end up interacting with people who are, like, way, way more into Street Fighter than I am, to the point where it's the only game they play. And so even though I've spent a total of, like, within the realm of, like, 80 to 100 hours playing Street Fighter 4 and Super Street Fighter 4, like, collectively, you know, I'm, like, a total noob-ass-tard because I don't know how to do such-and-such combos. And I'm like, but I do – I play other games. I have more of a breadth of, like, wisdom about me as far as, like, what games I've experienced, you know? And
well, you're a noob-ass-tard because – like, I probably have 80 to 100 days of just Street Fighter experience.
Yeah, exactly.
Since, like, day one. But, yeah, that's actually really funny. And, yeah, people will devote so much time. Like Jose is very good at first-person shooters.
Yeah.
But he couldn't play, like, Mario or shit. You know?
Really?
Yeah, I mean, that's what he knows. It's all, you know, he can't do the platforming elements in games, you know?
It takes a different set of skills to do that stuff.
Yeah, exactly, which, you know, I think says a lot about those who are well-rounded gamers, so.
Sorry, give me just one second here. What? They're up above the fridge. The hamburger buns or the hot dog buns?
Yeah.
They shouldn't be, but they might be. I don't know.
There might be any new bags anymore.
Oh, there should only be one. Sorry about that. My wife is making sausages.
Oh, delicious.
Indeed. But, oh, shoot, where were we? All right, yeah, like, with the, when it comes to, like, the sort of skill sets required in gaming, like, I kind of get turned off when people get, like, too hardcore. Like, I guess there's kind of, like, I don't even know how to put it, but there's, like, a peak to it to me. Like, you get really into a game, but then, like, there's a certain point where, like, a very small percentage of people get, like, super, super into it. And then once they get to that point, a lot of the attitudes that tend to form from that kind of turn me off. Like, I mean, you know, you look at my name, I'm a Smash Brothers fan. Like, I have been a Smash Brothers fan since the N64 game released in 99. It is my favorite game series, like, hands down. Mm-hmm. It, you know, for various reasons. I love the fighting game genre, but I only ever get attached to certain fighting games because they need to, like, certain things need to realign in the cosmos of a fighting game for me to, like, stick with it. Which is one of the reasons why I'm pretty into Street Fighter 4, because it somehow managed to do that. But my problem with Smash Brothers is that the hardcore community of Smash Brothers fans tends to do a lot of things that I don't like, at least the attitudes they tend to take up. Like, the whole, like, no items, none of the stages that actually involve moving parts, like, only certain characters, like, blah, blah, blah. And to me, that, like, takes away from the whole point of a game like that. Like, I've spent countless hours playing the Smash Brothers games, but I almost always play them with items on, with random levels, like, just play as, you know, random characters, whatever.
I think the general thought is that the items and the levels add a certain element of luck to it, but for me, what that says is that you have the ability to work around the scenarios. You know what I mean?
Exactly. That's exactly what I like. How I present my argument is that I play a lot of Smash Brothers, but even when I have the odds stacked against me, I tend to still, like, come out on top because, you know, I know enough about the mechanics of the game that I can still, like, most of the time, like, work my way around, like, when odds are stacked against me, and I get a thrill out of that. Like, I get a kick out of having to overcome those, like, weird, crazy, chaotic things that happen. And, like, I mean, you can talk about this stuff with many multiplayer games, like the Mario Kart series, people hate blue shells. In Smash Brothers, people hate tripping. I'm sure that there are other things in other multiplayer games I can't think of where stuff, like, you know, elements of luck come into play, but because it's an element of luck, it helps you as often as it hurts you. Like, just due to the simple probability, like, you're going to get hit by a blue shell as often as you use one, generally. So, I guess that you know will depend on the person, but
yeah.
Regardless, it's to me like I understand why people do that because they want it to be more skill based. But to me, like it comes back to what we were saying before with like being a well-rounded gamer. Like I think you're a more well-rounded Smash Brothers player when you have all that stuff turned on. I think that you're a more well-rounded gamer when you play Mario and you play Halo and you play God knows whatever else. Like even though I'm not into first-person shooters, I don't turn my nose at a first-person shooter just because it's of that genre. Some of my most favorite games are first-person shooters, like Left 4 Dead, like the BioShock games, like Borderlands I've been getting into. That combines RPG elements, but it is a first-person shooter in how it plays. So, I definitely agree with you on all that stuff there.
That's one thing we can agree on. That's good.
Indeed. And that's a good segue because there are some things that we don't agree on. And there was actually one thing I wanted to discuss with you.
Sure.
I am aware that you very much do not like Wii Music. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I take it you do like Wii Music.
I do. I haven't played it in a while, I admit, but I do like Wii Music.
Well, why not? You like it so much. Why don't you play it more often?
Honestly, it's just because I've had so many other things to play lately.
That are better?
Not that are better, just that, well, see.
Like everything in your game library?
The thing is that I don't look at Wii Music as a game, because honestly, it's not. Like people,
they don't sell it as a game.
Huh?
They don't sell it as a game. I guess that's my thing, is like.
Well, but see, does that mean that Nintendo shouldn't have sold Mario Paint? Because that's not a game either.
Sure, but you know what? The thing is, I think with Mario Paint, they were testing things out, you know, and trying to do things. And I understand. The Wii is a very unique console because some people consider it a gaming console. Some consider it this like I don't know. It's just like an entertainment system that plays video games.
Yeah.
You know, it's very novel. And I don't have anything against the Wii. I just think that some of the stuff they're coming out with is a joke, you know? And the idea of, you know, Wii Music has no interest to me at all. And I understand that there's some people that are like, you know, this is a game that can introduce people to music, and, you know, and in theory, I guess that's true, but how many people have you said they picked up a clarinet because they played it on Wii Music, you know? The only thing I've tried to do because on Wii Music was try to pick up my dog and make him bark like they do in that game, so and you shake your Wiimote around. So, yeah. You know, I haven't touched it in 2 years, 3 years, ever, you know, I think we got it in and it immediately went on the shelf.
And then it shortly thereafter became the receiver of a SAGI award, pretty
much.
That's
right. That is correct. Actually, I think I was going to say the only reason why we took it off the shelf was to get footage for it, for those videos. And I don't think it's moved ever since. I honestly think that may be the only game that has dust on it in our.
I can totally see your point. It's not like I have anything against people that don't like it. It's just, I guess for me, what I get out of it is, I mean, you know, like I've told you, like, I like creating things. Like, mm-hmm. I like writing things and making videos and making music and just creating stuff. And most of the time I won't focus too long on any one kind of thing. Game reviews is actually one of the only consistent things that I focus on. Like, I've been consistently writing game reviews for like 2-3 years, something like that now. Mm-hmm. 3 years, I think now. And that's the only thing I can think of that I create that is consistent. But like with Wii Music, I think one of the things that causes a lot of issues with that game is that it's not a game, and it is being presented as a game, but because I don't have the patience to download and look into a music creation software program and whatever, like, Wii Music is just, at least for me personally, is a very easy way for me to pick up something I am familiar with, which is a game controller, and create music because, like, I guess maybe create music isn't quite the right word for it because it's more like you're remixing music, but I, at first, was kind of skeptical of the game, but when I picked it up and started, like, making a Western version of this song or a jazz version of that song and, like, adding my own little things to it, whatever, like, for me personally, like, I get something out of that because I can create something that is my own without too much effort and without too much time that it would take to make a full piece of music by myself. And so, I don't know, just for me, it's something I enjoy, but I don't know, just felt like bringing that topic up.
I think that, you know, IGN put a very, very, I'm looking on I'm looking at their review on YouTube right now. Actually, I wanted to see some footage of Wii Music while we were playing.
Okay.
And their description is actually like phenomenal, and it says our condolences to the 2.5 million people who buy this game. You know, I think that's great. You know, like I don't really care. I don't want to play Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's
I hear you.
Whatever, you know, to each their own.
Exactly. No, I've probably spent about as much time, like, talking about that game as I have playing it, just because for me it's a very interesting example of, like, how video games have been kind of splintering in a way into things that aren't games anymore. Like, I mean, I play... I'm trying to think of a good example, but like when I play Flower is a game in the sense that I'm holding a game controller to control it and I'm interacting with it. But when I play that game, it doesn't feel like I'm playing a game. It feels like I'm like interacting with some kind of piece of art or something. I don't even know how to explain it. And to me, that's been like, I don't even know what you think of that idea, but to me, that's been one of my favorite aspects of video games of the past 5 years or so, is that more developers are acknowledging that games don't, like, they don't have to fit a certain format of win or lose, or, like, you don't beat a game, like, you can just create something using those digital tools and give people the means to interact with it, and it's still something that can be worthwhile, and, I don't know, I just think that's kind of interesting. Like, what do you think about that kind of thing? I have a funny feeling that you probably aren't all that big into that sort of thing, are you?
Well, here's my thought. When you can... In Wii Music, there's no score, right. You know? So it's like, why are you doing... You know, like, I'm a guy who's very objective-based, and I think a lot of gamers are.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm looking for a time waste, I would, you know, do something else. You know, I'd read a book. you know? I don't know. I would... I'm not looking to waste time. So I know a lot of people see games as being a time waster and such, and a hobby. And I agree they are a hobby, very much so. But I do like to have goals when whether it's beating a high score or beating this guy and whatever it may be, or teabagging a guy or whatever it may be. You know, I like to have goals.
Whereas in something like Mario Paint or Wii Music, there's not really a goal that's objective. It's something that you yourself decide. And I like
let's be honest about Mario Paint. All right. The game, you played it for one reason. Nat Attack. Nat Attack is why you play that game. And what made the game so cool was you tried to beat your score that you had. You tried to beat the number of rounds. It wasn't to create a perfect piece of art. And, yeah, I know people...
No, definitely.
You know, it was to play Nat Attack. That's why everybody played Mario Paint.
But, see, here's the thing, though, is that I don't know how often people still play Nat Attack, but I still see people, like, uploading to YouTube videos of songs they made with Mario Paint's song creation tool.
Sure.
It, like, sounds like ass compared to, like, you know, if you use actual sound equipment, but people still do it. Like, why do they do that? I don't know.
I think that started off as, like, a real novel thing that people were like, one guy did it, and he made some, like, you know, probably, like, Thriller or something like that, you know, in Mario Paint. And actually, they're not using the actual Mario Paint game. They're using a program that you can download, which is, you know.
Like,
so,
mix all the sound effects and everything?
Bingo, yeah. It's not like the official Mario Paint game. They're using a program that you can download online. They're not even doing Nintendo or used game retailers any good because they're downloading something, you know? So,
right.
So, you know, meh, that's what I say to that. there's all sorts of like really novel, you know, small communities and such. And that's cool. You know, that's really cool. And if people started uploading them onto Screw Attack, you know what? We'd probably feature them because I think they, you know, it's always cool to figure out what people are, what people are going to come up with next. But to me, you know, I don't have much interest in using the Mario Paint music creator from 1992.
Right.
I would much rather play Rez.
You know, amen to that. Oh, my God. That is one of my favorite games. And, like, that is a great example to me of something that can kind of, like, bridge the gap between people like us who have these differing opinions on this kind of thing, because Rez does have objective goals, but, like, it does keep track of your score. It keeps track of, like, your accuracy and all that. And it very much plays like an on-rail shooter, but at the same time, I play that game more for this kind of ethereal experience of, like, audio and visual, like, stuff that I'm controlling. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, why do you like Rez?
I think, you know, it's just such an interesting concept, and you know, I am a fan of, or I like the music that you can create, you know, through it. And plus, the trans vibrator is always also cool. I don't know if you've ever seen that before, but it's
I've seen it, but I've never used it before.
You should watch our top 10 worst peripherals, top 10 best and worst gaming peripherals. We put a trans vibrator between a girl's legs and made her play Rez. It was great.
Oh boy.
It was really good.
I believe it. So trying to think of what else I should ask you here while I have you here, but, I guess, just for the sake of it, like what games from this current generation have you really been getting into and like sinking your teeth into?
Well, most recently, we got a copy of 3D Game Heroes, and I know that's kind of a retro-ish type game, but yeah. I'm in love with that game right now. I think it's phenomenal. You know, I try to play a little bit of every game that comes out.
Yeah, me too.
Or at least just watch somebody play it so I can get a good idea of what's going on. And I know that watching somebody and playing it yourself is a little different. But you know, it helps you get a good idea of what's happening, what's going on. That's currently what's on my mind right now. I play a lot of Call of Duty.
Modern Warfare 2, or
yeah, usually just. I'm better at 2 than I am at 1 because it's so easy to be cheap in that game. the reason I like Call of Duty is the ability to go in. I'm a guy who can go in and play one match and put it down. I know a lot of people need to play, you know, for 3 hours or whatever, but yeah. I can play. It's a game that I can sit down, get a totally different experience every time because yep. No game is the exact same, and you can put it down in 10 minutes and be done with it. And that's what I like. Whereas, you know, some games you actually need to sit down and just, you know, take a full hour to play the game, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what I like about multiplayer games, you know, and that's what, it's just a different experience every time. You can come in, sit down, play it, be done in 10 minutes and move on to something else if you want to, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, multiplayer games, like, at their core are the definition of a video game. Like, it's, you're playing a game, a set of rules, like with other people, and it is different each time. I mean, it makes sense that a lot of gamers also like sports because that's exactly what sports are. So,
or esports, as they call them.
Or esports, yeah, or those. Because, I mean, it's the same deal. You've got a set of rules, you've got a set of players. The players might even be the same between different games, but the game is going to play out in a different way every time. I guess for me, I've been getting into Street Fighter 4 a lot, but obviously I play Smash Brothers. Smash Brothers is like my local multiplayer game when I have like friends over. That's what I'll play with them, and then Street Fighter is what I play online. But I've also recently found a couple of games that are shooting games because that's usually not my forte. I'm not usually into shooters, but I'm really into Uncharted 2's multiplayer. I don't quite know why. I guess part of it is because it's a third-person shooter, and my mind can just wrap around those easier. But it's great. Like, I can sit down, pick that game up, play around for, like, 10, 15 minutes, put it back down. Like, I love that. So,
yeah, exactly.
Actually, that brings up the Street Fighter games. Like, obviously, you are a Street Fighter fan, but, like, what... Like, do you, like, go back to a certain particular version of Street Fighter and play that regularly? Or, like, do you kind of jump across the board? Or, like, how do you go about that?
I can play any Street Fighter at any time, really. I didn't get into the Zero series or the Alpha series so much, other than Alpha 3. I didn't play Alpha 1 or 2 very much. And the EX series, the 3D ones, I didn't play very much. I just know they're really, really bad and wanted to play them. I didn't like them. But just the core games, you know, I can even play Street Fighter 1. But Street Fighter 1 just isn't a very good game.
No, kind of isn't.
No. And it's, you know, but you can see where they're going with it.
Yeah.
And Street Fighter 2, I can play any of those. 3, I can play the original 3. I haven't played much Second Impact, but I can definitely play Third Strike. Obviously I can play 4, and I can play Super 4 because, you know, it's pretty much the exact same game, so.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I just saw your video game review of that just a couple days ago. I can definitely see why a lot of people wouldn't really be that into it. For me, I guess why I'm so into it is because, like, I guess Super Street Fighter 4 was designed for people like me, I guess, that, you know, that is the Street Fighter game that we play. And, you know, why would I not want to add 10 more characters and, like, extra online modes? Like, for me, it was, like, no question. Like, I've already invested so much time in Street Fighter 4. I know I'm going to invest just as much, if not more, into this one. So, like, why not? And, like, I'm actually really glad that I picked it up because it's actually encouraged me to start breaking out of my, like, couple of characters that I used and actually play as all of the characters. And I've already found, like, three new characters that were introduced in this one that I like want to actually play more as.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. You know, I totally respect and I understand. I think for everybody who is not like crazy hardcore, it's a game that you need to buy because it's a good game.
I mean, it is.
Don't get me wrong, Street Fighter 4 is a good game,
especially if you don't have the first one. Like if you don't even have the first Street Fighter 4.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to buy Super Street Fighter 4. But with that being said, I don't. You know. Like, okay, I love Street Fighter 4. I love it. I love the game. I play it all the time. Chad and I have epic battles and such. But I just think that I've played Dudley before. I've played Makoto before. I've played Ibuki before. I've played Adon before. You know, I've played all these characters before, and they're the exact same thing in this game. And I know there's different elements, you know, the focus attacks and such, but really, I mean, I've done this. I've experienced it before. I, you know, they play very similar to how they did, you know. And I and something that was, I said in the VGR, which a lot of people took exception to, was, or at least some of the hardcore was that you can't sit down and learn this game in a weekend. Well, you can't learn the game in a weekend. You can't learn any fighting game in a weekend.
Right.
You know, but you can get the gist of it, which is what I said. You get an idea.
And if it's like, if it adds enough new stuff that you want, then go ahead and get it. But, you know, if it doesn't, then just stick with what you got was basically your take on it, right?
Yeah, you know, and the thing is, essentially, you got four modes that most people won't use and two new characters. And the other eight characters, people, you know, at least avid Street Fighter players have already played.
Exactly.
And I know that I'm in a very vocal minority with this, but at the same time, it's a VGR about my opinion.
Exactly.
And
and
that's kind of, that's exact, you know, and I know that I know I'm in the minority and I know that some people are like, rah, 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 you're nitpicking. But here's the thing. People talk about, and this is something I'm going to make a video about sooner than later, but people talk about how great the little things in games are, the little details that games get right. It's the little details in this game that made it so great. Well, if you can pinpoint the great little things in a game, how come you can't nitpick? What's the difference?
Yeah,
you
know? Pretty much.
I don't understand what the difference is, you know, and that's actually kind of an epiphany I had in the last couple weeks, you know. It's like, if I can talk about how great this was or this was in this game, and the designers really paid attention to detail here, well, how can I say they didn't pay attention to detail here?
Right.
Or I don't like this, you know?
Yeah, there's, definitely.
I don't know. It's just something that I kind of really thought about the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
In serious, deep thought.
Right. Like, see, for not like, I mean, this this brings up just like the topic of game reviews in general. I mean, as someone who writes game reviews regularly, like, I've actually had to force myself more as I write game reviews more often to not be too, I don't even know how to put, like, I guess I would say wishy-washy in terms of, like, trying to broaden my review to, like, the widest audience or whatever. Like, I want my reviews to be my opinion. So, like, when I write a review, I sit down and I write it. And whatever my opinion is, that's what it is, and I try not to edit it too much because that's what I thought going in.
Yeah.
And so, like, for me, with something like Super Street Fighter 4, I've never played as any of those characters before. So to me, like, Dudley, I'm loving playing as Dudley. He feels completely new to me. But as someone like you, you know, like, you might know him inside and out for all I know. So, like, it's, you know, game reviews, in my opinion, need to, like, focus on that. That's people who share your experiences with a genre should follow your reviews, as opposed to people who have more experiences with, like, my taste or whatever should follow mine more instead or whatever. Because if we all just sort of are like, well, you know, you might like this or you might not, like, if we just, you know, if we don't, like, nail down our specific taste, then what's the point in doing the review in the first place?
Yeah, and that's kind of why we have so many different people doing reviews on Screw Attack, you know, because everybody has their own thing, and I, you know, it doesn't make sense for me to give a Pokemon game to you know, whoever, you know, Destin, when he doesn't know anything about it.
Yeah,
so I, you know, it's much better to give it to Jose or Ben or Jared, you know, so.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so we're closing in at about an hour here, so, and both of us should probably get going in a little bit here. So I guess, like, as a sort of closing thought here, is there, like, anything that you want to, you know, throw out there to the G1s, like, speaking just as you, as a person, like, I don't know,
sure.
Anything at all?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I am a person, and I do like to speak, so I'll gladly throw stuff out. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I say this all the time, but we couldn't do what we do at Screw Attack without the support of you. And we greatly appreciate everything you guys do, whether it's watching our videos or spreading the word or coming to SGC. You know, we know that you guys are the core about everything that we do. And everything we do, we think about how it would affect our community, you know, because we know that we can't do what we do without your support. So thank you guys very much for what you do. Thank you very much for allowing me to invade your interview time. You know, it's definitely a distinct honor, and we feel very privileged to be able to do what we do on a day-to-day basis. So thank you guys very much, and thank you for your continued support, and you know, keep spreading the word and keep bringing in new community members. You know, we're all here to service you. That sounded very gay.
Oh boy. Yeah. No, amen to that. I mean, that's what you guys seem to have designed the site for, is bringing in people and just, you know, closing the gaps between different kinds of gamers. That's kind of, I mean, you know, that's kind of like the theme, I guess you could say, of this podcast right here, is like bringing on new people each time, like new opinions, new thoughts, but like all sharing like the similar passion. So,
bingo. The common goal between everybody at Screw Attack is video games and fun, and those are the two goals that everybody in Screw Attack can share. You know, everybody likes video games, everybody likes having fun, and that's the common goal behind everything that we do. So.
Amen. And with that, I guess we'll head off then. I definitely want to thank you for spending some time to chat with me. I've been able to talk with Nathan Barnett and Brentalfloss, and now you, like. Where else do I take that? Like, it's so awesome to be able to talk with all these guys whose work I follow and stuff. So it's been an honor and a pleasure.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it, and good luck with everything you do, man.
Thank you. And thanks a lot for listening to The Same Skycast, everybody. If you want to participate in an upcoming episode, feel free to send me an email at destiny.smasher@gmail.com. I'll be posting some links in the down in the description for stuff we've got coming up soon. For the month of May, I want to have an entire discussion-based podcast about the fighting genre. So I might end up editing in some of our discussion into that podcast. So stay tuned for that. Definitely contact me if you're wanting to discuss anything like that. But, yeah, it's been a good time. Yeah. And until next time, everybody, thanks for listening, and later days.
Bye-bye, later days.